It's Wednesday, the 2nd of March, 2016. Happy birthday to Yonah Shirepko and Jason Smith. Welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by Moneyball.com.au and Legendary T238. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be a sponsor of the podcast like Legendary T238, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can become that sponsor. To thank you to everyone who has done that. And if you've got 5 minutes spare and you do like the show, if you could do it, it'd be great. I'd really appreciate just going across onto iTunes and leaving that review. It helps the show out immensely. When I go to sponsors, when I try and grow the show, I can say, look at this, there's 500, 600, 1,000 people who have left positive reviews and love the show. And it really helps tremendously. So thank you to everyone who has done that. Also, of course, Moneyball, Australia and New Zealand's best daily fantasy sports site. If you're not playing on Moneyball and you love fantasy basketball, I highly recommend that you do. We've got a lot of stuff to get to today. There were 6 games on Tuesday. There are 11 games coming up on Wednesday. So
let's get to it.
I will. We'll start off with the Instagram contest of the day. And we're looking at Doug McDermott. How many combined points and rebounds would Dougie get? And he got a combined 12. 11 points and 1 rebound. No one got that one right. But on Facebook, we went for Paul Millsap. And we're looking for a big number from him. Paul, points, rebounds, steals, and blocks. The total he got was 33. 2 people got that right. Dylan Mee, hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, and Matt Matawarren. I also hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. So congratulations to Dylan and Matt. On Wednesday, we're going to be looking on Instagram at Gorgie Jeng, combined points, rebounds, and blocks. And on Facebook, we are looking at D'Angelo Russell, combined points and assists. So if you're on Instagram, follow me along at redrock_bball and facebook.com/redrockbasketball, where you can always join in the conversation over there. That takes me beautiful transition into the monstrous line of the night. And it is, of course, you might not be able to tell actually from the title of this podcast, but if you're watching the video, you can sure see his jersey hanging behind me. And that is D'Angelo Russell of the Los Angeles Lakers. I titled this podcast, Thanks Byron, because it's a more of a sarcastic thanks, in that thanks, it took you 4 months to get your head out of your ass and actually let this guy play rather than let bullshit like Lou Williams play 35 minutes. Russell has been unleashed. This is the 4th highest scoring rookie total for a Lakers player ever. He dropped 39 points, including 8 triples. He went 14 of 21 from the field. He had 6 rebounds, 3 assists, and 1 steal, and has been awesome lately. Over the last 3 games, he's a top 20 player. He's a top 50 guy over the last 2 weeks. He's only owned in 74% of leagues, so there's a lot of inactive leagues, or he's still around for some reason. He has to be owned. Has to be owned everywhere. I've been saying he's a must-own guy probably since the start or middle of December, even when, you know, Scott was doing everything he could to ruin the kid. And Byron Scott had a ridiculous quote today, something about the... I want to find it because it was ludicrous. Let's find this quote. Just bear with me. Great radio. Probably should have prepared this one earlier. Let's find out. Talk amongst yourselves for a sec while I find this. Here we go. Byron, I like messing with young guys. It's fun. And to which someone responded, why? I'm trying to find what they're made of. They're probably better blokes than you, Byron, to be honest. That's just shit. And that the Lakers, a historic franchise in the NBA, has got this guy in control of the highest draft pick they've had in forever, since Magic Johnson, basically. And he's doing it for fun? Ah, it's fun. I'm going to hang shit on these guys. I'm going to confuse them. I'm going to break their spirit. And I suppose there's something to be said, well, I'm going to make them stronger, but it doesn't always work that way. You can just ruin a guy completely. Now, Russell's come out of it stronger, but he could have been doing this much earlier. It's just not it's not ideal for having Byron Scott coaching this team. Russell finally unleashed and putting up massive, massive numbers. Of course, he's the monstrous line of the night, so he is also the young gun of the night. Let's look at the waiver wire line of the night, and it's a player who you're probably not going to utilize all that much, to be honest, off your waiver wire. Amari Stoudemire played 15 minutes for the Heat as a starter again. And I talk about guys, you know, why is this guy starting? Why is this guy starting? All that sort of stuff. I don't give a shit that Amari Stoudemire is starting and Hassan Whiteside is coming off the bench. Because Whiteside is playing 32 minutes, 33 minutes every night, and Stoudemire knows his role. My problem with that sort of thing lies in Milwaukee, where, you know, Carter Williams moved to the bench, Monroe moves to the bench, and Kidd will play them, and despite what he says in his protest, I will play them the same, probably more, but he won't, and they'll lose 2 minutes a game, 3 minutes a game, 10 minutes a game. That's where the problem is. Not in this sort of situation. Stoudemire, back to him. 15 minutes as a starter. 7 points and four rebounds, which is really good in 15 minutes, but five block shots and hit all three of his field goal attempts. That's something interesting. But overall, what are you doing with him, really? You're looking in a 20-team league. That's probably about it for Amari. He had a nice little run when Whiteside was out and he had to play minutes in the mid-20s, but when he's playing 15 minutes or so, there's no real use for him in fantasy leagues. So leave him for those deeper formats. But if by chance, for some reason, you had him in a lineup and he had the five blocks, you'd be pretty impressed with that. Speaking of shit coaching, the Orlando Magic gives us the dud of the night, and that is Victor Oladipo. He played just the 24 minutes. He was brutally bad, though. He wasn't good. I'll give him that. 3 of 10 shooting for 6 points, four rebounds, and two assists. But once again, I'm glad that Skiles lost, because I hate this tomfoolery. It's not even the right word, because I want to swear more, but I want to keep it relatively PG and not drop too many F-bombs, or any, really. That's sort of the rules I have on the podcast to myself. I might get really fired up and drop. I think I've dropped one all season, but Skiles, he just does this consistently. It is super frustrating. And I know people will say, yeah, he's got them winning. You know what? He doesn't. They're not winning. They've been brutal since November. They've been terrible. So all your tinkering, Scott, it doesn't help. You're not a good coach. You've got a shit reputation in the NBA as a coach. And you don't care about fantasy. But I don't mind if you do things bafflingly or frustratingly, like Brad Stevens does in Boston with his front court. And you go, what's going on? But it works. And it works well. And he's a really good coach. And I don't have a problem with that. I have a problem with this sort of thing that he does, like Oladipo playing 24 minutes. Nick Vucevic hasn't cracked 30 minutes in the last three games, and he's their best player by a long stretch. Ersan Ilyasova barely got to 15 minutes a game. He plays 31 here. It's just, it can't be good for their development. It can't be good for anything with this team. And it didn't get them the win. So Skiles, didn't work. Stiff shit. Anyway, Oladipo had been flying before this, so I don't think it's anything to be too concerned about. His shooting percentage, which was out of control good for a big stretch, has dropped off significantly. He's down at 39% over the last 2 weeks, and that's getting closer or more in line with his season averages, when at one stage he was about 45, 46, and that has dropped back down. He's still going to be that nice talent in the third 30s, 40s, that sort of range. But he's always going to be subject to this sort of stupidity from Skiles. And that's what happened. And he is the dud of the night. Let's take a look now at the perfect DFS lineup. At point guard, Kemba Walker, 47.7. He was in a great matchup against Phoenix. I was interested in him. The salary was a little bit high, but he definitely blew out all my expectations as the Suns got pummeled by the Hornets. D'Angelo Russell was a guy that I was massive on yesterday. He turned out massive, 49.7, and that's a great line. He was a key DFS contributor. Joe Johnson with a big game in his second game for the Heat, 36 points. Clay had 40.7 with Steph out. Melo had 44. He's been a really consistent DFS player recently. And Bojan Bogdanovic, 31.9. We'll talk more about the Nets a little bit later. I mentioned Ersan Ilyasova before. He had 38 DFS points. He played a lot of minutes out of nowhere, and that's what happens with Skiles. And that there was other factors involved there with Aaron Gordon getting a stack of fouls that allowed Ersan to play some extra minutes, but still, I'll give Skiles the blame. Draymond had 47.6 again, without Steph, some extra usage for him. And the center, Hassan Whiteside, went 51.3. That total would have given you 386.9 points, which overall is a pretty good total. Now it's time for a quick word from our presenting sponsor today, and that is SeatGeek. Have you ever been frustrated trying to buy tickets online? Most sites make it complicated, and they all try to sneak in huge fees at checkout. That's why you need to try SeatGeek. They've made it easier than ever to buy and sell sports and concert tickets. SeatGeek's a great place to go. I just had an email from a great listener of the show, Justin, who's in the Red Rock Dynasty League, and he's in Australia, and he's heading over to the US to go to the playoffs. And he's going, how do I get tickets? And he said, I think SeatGeek would be a good option for me. Justin, I agree. Use SeatGeek. You can go on there now and start looking at regular season options. And when you get over there for the playoffs, there'll be options available on SeatGeek for playoff tickets. So, Justin, there are other ways to get tickets, but I do recommend you try out SeatGeek as your first option, because I reckon you're going to get the best deal there because of all the things I'm about to tell you about. SeatGeek takes all the work and hassle out of shopping for tickets. They pull all the tickets available on other sites into one place, so you save time and never miss a deal. You can even set alerts for upcoming events, and SeatGeek will let you know if ticket prices fall. Even better, every ticket on SeatGeek is ranked based on value. So, Justin, you can find immediately underpriced seats. And before you buy, you can use SeatGeek's detailed maps to see the view from your seat. Best of all, SeatGeek is always honest and upfront about the price. Unlike StubHub, they show you the full ticket price from start to finish and never try to trick you with huge fees on the checkout page. My listeners get $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate, download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Add the promo code, which is REDROCK, one word. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter the promo code REDROCK today. So if you're like Justin, you're heading across from Australia to the US to watch some NBA games and playoff games, make sure you're using SeatGeek. If you live in the States, hey, why aren't you using that promo code already? I know plenty of the listeners have done it. $20 is $20, plus you're saving money on tickets, plus you're supporting the podcast. Who loses here? I don't think anyone loses in this sort of deal. So, hey, you got an opportunity to help support the podcast that takes you 2 minutes. Sign up, use your promo code, and you know what? You might actually use it and benefit. So that would be awesome for everybody involved. We are going to look now at the games in a little bit more detail, all six of them from, what day was it? That's the day from Tuesday. The days are really confusing me at the moment. It's been a long season. Let's bring up the box scores to have a look at if you are watching along on video. There we go. They're up on the screen for you now. And let's talk about these games, starting with the first game of the night. It's always a good place to start. The Phoenix Suns and the Charlotte Hornets. The Suns absolutely destroyed by the Hornets. And as per usual with Earl Watson, who is becoming increasingly frustrating as a coach, some baffling rotations. In a game where they were down by 35, they were running at the end of the game Tyson Chandler, PJ Tucker, and Ronnie Price. You wouldn't want to develop some of the younger players. You're just running out old players who are going to have no future in the next good Suns team. It makes no sense to me. Anyway, Alex Len is a guy that I said was must own after the trade deadline. He's must own now. 34 minutes, 18 and 12. He took 15 shots. He only hit 5 of them. That won't be the commonplace thing for him. 8 of 10 from the free throw line. That is one of his strengths. He's a decent, not a great free throw shooter, not an 80% guy on 10 attempts, but he's a decent free throw shooter. He's a good rebounder. He'll normally block shots. He should be owned everywhere. And good thing I can say about Watson is he's playing Len over Chandler. Let's hope that continues. But at the moment, that's definitely a positive thing for fantasy. Mirza Teletovic had 20 minutes. He had 17 points with 4 triples. He had a block as well. He's continuing to produce. His minutes aren't going to be ever through the roof because he's just not going to start. And Earl Watson has said that we need him on the bench because I think Earl's quote was, who else is going to score? And that's completely fair enough. He'll play off the bench, but he'll play decent minutes. He'll get a stack of shots and he'll hit them and you'll hit 3. So you're going to get points, you're going to get 3s, and you're going to get good free throw percentage out of Mirza. Chandler at 8-3. Hit all 4 of his shots in 26 minutes. He's not a 12-team league target to me. John Lua, Watson hates him. Fair enough. I don't think Lua's that good. And Devin Booker is really struggling. He was 4 of 16 from the field for 13 points. He hit a 3. He hit a steal. He was all the rage when the end of December, start of January, people were proclaiming him to be awesome. He could be. He isn't at the moment. He's outside the top 200 on the season. He's outside the top 300. Over the last 2 weeks while playing 30 minutes. If you're in a 12-team league, I'm not sure that you need to hold on to Devin Booker, to be honest, because his shooting has cratered. Now, that's the thing, though. 28% over the last 2 weeks, he's probably not going to continue to shoot 28%. Can you get it back up to 40 and then his numbers rise? But I don't know. He just doesn't do enough in the other categories for me to be, yeah, I've got to hold on to this guy. Yeah, he has to be owned in 10s or 12s. And honestly, in a 14-team league, he's pushing the friendship as well, whether I look to keep holding onto him. But really, really struggling at the moment. I think when Brandon Knight returns, if he ever returns, Booker is going to be relieved and less pressure on him, and that might help his game. Archie Goodwin, strictly a backup now, 22 minutes, 10 and 4. His value in 10, 12, 14-team leagues is really, really low. Ronnie Price is the starter at point guard. I can't believe we're in the NBA. And it's 2016, And for the last two seasons, Ronnie Price has been a starter on NBA teams. How is that possible? Look, I know the Suns have copped it with point guards. I know that. But you're working Goodwin into a point guard, whatever you were doing. Play him. Why is Ronnie Price playing? The Lakers played him inordinate amount of time last year. Why is he playing as a starting point guard for two seasons in the NBA? I left that gap there so you can fill in your own answer because it doesn't make any sense to me. Anyway, PJ Tucker had 3 points. He had 7 boards and 2 steals. He's not really a must-own guy. He had a massive game the game before, but had been really struggling before that, and I think that's probably more the PJ Tucker we see for the rest of the year. He struggled mightily to start the season, had a nice hot stretch, and has dropped off again. Onto the Hornets, Kemba went 26-6-9. He had 3 triples and a steal in just 30 minutes on 9 of 16 shooting. A big night for him. Same with Nick Batum, who went 15-9-4 with 2 threes in 31 minutes. It really helps when you play the Suns. Al Jefferson, big game from him. 19 minutes for Jefferson. 19 points, 7 rebounds, 1 block. Doesn't change my opinion on him. I'm not adding him in 12 team leagues. He played 19 minutes. He's not going to shoot. He's not going to get 19 points in 19 minutes very often. He can be left alone. He barely scored in the previous two games. Not for me. Cody Zeller's also not for me in 12 team leagues, as much as I do like him. 21 minutes, 9-7-4 for Zeller. And Marvin Williams went 5-6-2 with 3 steals. It's hard to get a good read on this Hornets box score because the game was a blowout, so minutes were spread. We saw Jorge Gutierrez play 8 minutes. And many of you probably don't even know that Jorge Gutierrez plays on the Hornets. That's how much of a blowout this game was. Also, if you were entertaining any thoughts of Courtney Lee being a 12-team league player, you can erase those from your mind. He played 24 minutes and had 8 points. He's just not a 12-team league guy. He's not. And he's competing with Jeremy Lamb and Jeremy Lin, and they're going to take minutes away from him, and he's not going to be effective enough. Lin, not a 12-team league guy either. 6-3 for him in 17 minutes. And Frank Kaminsky had 9-7 with 2 triples in his 20 minutes of action. The Chicago Bulls and the Miami Heat. Bobby Portis. I've talked about him a lot this season. I've talked about my issues with the free Bobby Portis talk and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, maybe do I say it? Free Bobby Portis? Is he going to be free now? And again, you've heard my criticisms of that sort of mindset. Not with Portis, but just with everyone. But now the Bulls have to play him. No Mirotic, no Noah, and Taj Gibson has done a hammy. Now Gibson, he's currently listed as questionable, but he did say he felt something in the hamstring, which is not great. They play tomorrow, the Bulls. Pretty much zero chance he plays in that one. Portis in a 12-team league, I think you go and add him. I know you go and add him in a 12-team league, in a 10-team league even as well. If Mirotic looks like he's a couple of weeks away still, the hamstring could be 2 weeks for Gibson. You're going to see 27, 28 minutes of Portis moving forward. Now, the other times when he was able to get, or not when he's able to get a start, because he didn't start, When Gibson was out, when Gasol was out, he played off the bench and Cameron Bairstow started. And he played 25, 26 minutes, but he didn't go for 32 or 33. So we have to temper our expectations a little bit there. Portis played 27 minutes here. He had 11-7. He had 4 steals and he hit a 3. He's still going to be all over the place. He's still going to be unreliable. He's still going to be inconsistent. But the minutes, if they go from 23 to 28 or 27, that's the difference for me. And now is the time. Now is a great time to add him. Pau Gasol went 15-9-6 with a block and a 3. Big night from him. Etuan Moore, limited to just 19 minutes. Now, there were some foul trouble issues there. 8-2-2, had 2 steals and 2 threes. Jimmy Butler looks like he's going to be back on the weekend, so I'm not sure that there's much point in holding on to Moore at this point of the season. Derrick Rose returned, had a minutes limit, but still had 17 points on 6 of 11 shooting, so that's pretty good. 3 assists with a steal and a 3. He'll be fine, hopefully. Mike Dunleavy got to 29 minutes. He's a 14-team league guy for me. And Dougie McDermott, I touched on him before. He had 11 points in 26 minutes. But with Butler coming back, the 30 minutes that he was playing is going to move down to more 25-24. I just wish that he would take all of Tony Snell's minutes, to be honest. But I can recognize the defensive ability that Snell brings and the lack of defensive ability that McDermott brings. And if you're playing McDermott in 30 minutes, you're going to cop a fair hiding defensively. Aaron Brooks got some extra run in this one with Rose limited. 22 minutes for Brooks, 16 points on 5 of 15 shooting. I place no faith in Aaron Brooks. The Heat, Joe Johnson, started, played 33 minutes, went 24-5-4 with a block and 2 triples. That's awesome. He's also not a 10 of 13 shooter. It's just not what he is. He's been brutally bad as a shooter this season. He didn't come to Miami and all of a sudden become Steph Curry. And it's one of the things I spoke about a lot at trade deadline time, is that when guys get traded, we look really closely at the first two games, and first game in particular, second game as well. And, oh, Joe Johnson went 24 points. That's awesome. He's going to be great. He's going to be awesome. But he's not going to shoot 75% every game. It's going to drop back down. He's a 42% shooter on the season, which is, you know, one of his worst shooting seasons of his career. Yes, he's playing with better teammates that are going to take more of the defensive focus away from him, and that's understandable. But and he has to be owned. There's zero doubt that Joe Johnson has to be owned. He's already was a top 75 player the last 2 months, a top 60 guy the last month. He had to be owned already. And what my suggestion was, I thought he'd lose value, but we hold on and see how it plays out in Miami. And it's played out really well in his favor. So, yeah, you got to hold on to him. Hassan Whiteside, where did we get this guy from? 26 and 14 in 33 minutes, 4 blocks, 10 of 11 from the free throw line. He's changed his free throw style and apparently doesn't miss anymore. Very, very weird stuff happening with Whiteside. He has been absolutely awesome. He is a 95% shooter over the last 4 games, 81 over his last 2 weeks, 77 over the last month. If he has solved that, he could be a top 10 player next year. It's a big statement, I know, but over the last month, he's ranked 7th. If he's shooting 63 from the field and 77 from the free throw line, then it's massive. It is such a huge, huge advantage. Plus, if he's blocking 4 shots a game, nice tweet coming in from Owen Daly, who's obviously looking at my screen share and sees one of my favorites set up there. And are you enjoying those homemade recipes? Any recommendations? I'll give you my recipe tips in one of the episodes. That homemade recipe tab there is for a Jamie Oliver 30-minute meal, oozy mushroom risotto. Owen, I'll send you the recipe later. But it was pretty nice, actually. Mix of about 3 mushrooms. Really enjoyed it. Thanks for pointing that out. Back to Whiteside. Yeah, his numbers are fantastic. And he's putting up huge ones at the moment. If this free throw thing is real, and look, it's over a month or so. It's been much improved, and that means that if you're punting free throws, he's already close to a top 10 guy, or he was a top 10 guy anyway, but he becomes in play for all sorts of builds. The other thing about him is, and you do worry about some of his mental makeup, he gets a big contract, he goes to a different team that's not as rigid, not as supportive as the Heat. Does he go off the rails? Yeah, that's a risk. And when I did the Dynasty Monster board on Basketball Monster, I put him down, I think, from memory at about 30 because of that risk. Because if his head's on straight and he's playing in a supportive environment, then and the money doesn't go to his head, then he's a top 15 player because of his abilities, the massive field goals, the massive rebounds, the massive blocks. And now all of a sudden, he's a 20-point scorer. Now, some of that's because Bosch is out. And some of that scoring will go down. But he'd be a top 10 guy. It's going to be very interesting where he goes. And I think a lot of these upper echelon players, where they go doesn't really impact their fantasy value so much. Him, I think it's going to have a big bearing on where we see him next year. If he goes to a team where I think it suits him and the culture's there and all that sort of stuff, I wouldn't be scared of taking him at the end of the first round. I might seem like I'd probably back out when I get to the actual draft, but the numbers they're out of control good. They are out of control. And you're winning blocks basically by having him. It's like having Steph Curry for threes. You've got Whiteside, you've won blocks. And then he adds big numbers in those other categories. You obviously have to draft well around him because you get no assists, no threes, minimal steals. But he's a very, very interesting player. The most interesting player, aside from Kevin Durant, in free agency next year. Luol Deng has to be owned as well. Now, much like Joe Johnson, he's not going to be an 8 of 10 shooter, but 20 points with 3 triples, 4 rebounds, 2 assists. He's really thriving in this new role at the 4. And Goran Dragic, 17, 4 and 11 in his 35 minutes. A much better second half for him. Dwayne Wade had 18 and 7 with a steal and a block. So a big night from all of these Heat guys. My boy Josh Richardson, another big night. Josh McRoberts out of the rotation. Gerald Green out of the rotation. I like McRoberts a lot. 9 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals. Hit a 3. He's a 16-team league guy, I think, at the moment, and I really do like his dynasty potential. Justice Winslow is down to 27 minutes here. He had 8 and 2 and not much else. If there's someone you really want to go and add, in a 12-team league and you own him, that's fine because he's a borderline 12-team league guy, as it was. In a 14-team league, I'm probably still holding just to see exactly. Again, it depends on who's around because you might find someone who's, you know, going to be more steadier and more productive. But not dropping just because he went down to 27 in this one game. We'll wait and see. The Heat, though, all of a sudden turned things up offensively as well. 130 points or 129 points they scored here. The Portland Trailblazers against the New York Knicks. Big win for the Blazers on the road. Dame Lillard, 30 points, 4 rebounds, 6 assists. And CJ McCollum had 25, 3 and 2. While Myers Leonard, don't look now, but Myers Leonard is coming back. 25 minutes for Leonard, 11 and 14, 3 triples and a block. I'm not suggesting that we go and add him in 12-team leagues. I'm not suggesting anything along those lines. But I'm suggesting that you look at him because over the last week, he's averaging 2.5 triples a game, 10.6.5 rebounds on 61% shooting. Yes, 61% shooting and 67% shooting from the three-point line. One of the things that was a real appeal from him last year is he was a 50-40-90 guy as a center. That's huge. And the percentages are well down this year. He's at 46, 74, and 37. They're still pretty okay. But recently, the play has definitely improved for Myers Leonard, and he's someone to keep a very, very keen eye on because getting those percentages, hitting the threes, some rebounds, and some scoring could be worthwhile coming into the playoffs. So he's a guy to watch, but he's streaking at the moment. Mason Plumlee missed all three of his shots, 2 points, but did have 7 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, and 2 blocks, so it wasn't a lost night for him. Ed Davis continues to get it done. 9-9 for Davis in 24 minutes, 2 blocks. But the problem with Leonard, with Plumlee, with Davis, is they all limit each other. And that's a real issue with them. You know, for 10-team leagues, it's hard to own any of them. You know, 12-team leagues, they're on the borderline because their minutes do limit what they're able to do. Still, Davis is providing great rebounding, great field goal percentage, and awesome block numbers recently. So he can be a guy to stream in for those numbers. El-Farouq Aminu, he's tough to own at the moment. 21 minutes, 4-4. A steal with 2 blocks, not necessarily a must-own player. And Noah Vonleh continues to start and continues to do nothing, and I have real fears for him ever becoming a valuable NBA player. The Knicks, Carmelo Anthony, 34 minutes, 23 and 10, 4 assists, 1 steal, 1 block. He's been superb since Kurt Rambis took over. He was looking pretty good before that anyway, but another one of those guys who was hated a lot for his start to the season, but he is coming home pretty strongly at the moment. He's still a top 35 player on the season. His field goal percentage has dipped, which is not usual for him at this point of the year. Normally it's increasing, but he's averaging these last 2 weeks, 9 rebounds, 4.5 assists, a steal, half a block, 22 points. These are all very, very good numbers for Melo. So let's just hope that he's able to play out the season. Kristaps
percentages.
He played 25 minutes, went 11 and 7, had a triple, had a steal, had 3 blocks. The minutes are still a real pain, but the fouls are really bothering him at the moment. He had 5 fouls in his 25 minutes. Obviously still a guy that you have to own, but DFS-wise, he's a little bit shaky. Aaron Aflalo was back after that one-game absence, 13 and 6 in 36 minutes for him. Yeah, you know my thoughts on him. And Robin Lopez, oh, Derek Fisher's back. 19 minutes for Lopez, 8 and 2, not a good night, but you still hold on to him. While Akok got 25 minutes in Lopez's absence, O'Quinn had 11 points, 2 triples and 9 rebounds. I want to see 30 minutes of Cock. I need to see him out there for the full, you know, a full start and see what happens. I want no restrictions on my Cock. He needs to be out there really being able to put up numbers, and just because I know that he can do great stuff for fantasy. I don't want him to play over Lopez if Lopez gets hurt. I just want to see him out there. It'd be very interesting to me to see what he's able to do. Jose Calderon played 25 minutes as the point guard. He is not ownable, nor is Jerian Grant, nor is Langston Galloway, who scored 0 points on 0 of 7 shooting. That's obviously a nadir in his performance. He will be better than that, but he won't be better enough that I need to look at owning him. The Orlando Magic and the Dallas Mavericks. Oh, I don't know what to say about this Magic lineup. Ilyasova played 31 minutes and went 22 and 10. I do like Ilyasova, but 31 minutes is not something that's going to happen. Aaron Gordon only had 19 minutes because of the fouls. He went 7, 5, and 4. We can pass that one off. Mario Hezonja started in place of Evan Fournier, who that wrist injury is looking a little bit more serious than anticipated. 2 points for Hezonja in 15 minutes. We saw the bench empty. Devin Marbel played 23 minutes, 8, 6, and 3 with 2 steals. If we knew that he was going to get mid-20s in minutes, he's a great steals streamer, but that's about it. Dwayne Dedman played 16 minutes. For what reason? I've got no idea. 16 minutes, 12 and 6, or Nick Vucevic played 24 and went 18 and 7 with 2 blocks on 8 of 16 shooting. So still really good numbers for Vuce, But, yeah, Skiles. CJ Watson played 30 minutes. Of course he did. And Brandon Jennings played 24 and went 12 points with 6 assists and 2 steals. That's Watson's played 20 minutes in the last 3 games in a row. He's becoming a 16-team league guy, maybe even a 14-team league guy. While Jennings, it's really hard to know because he could play 10 minutes one game, he could play 24. He's definitely not a guy that I'm looking to add in a 12-team format. Skiles. The Mavericks. Zaza Pachulia, 31 minutes, 17 and 10, a steal and a block. Exactly what Pachulia owners have been waiting to see after 2 really down games. That gives us an idea that maybe it's not going to be a consistent thing of him getting limited, so that's awesome. David Lee played 14 minutes, 7 and 4 with 2 blocks. The 2 blocks is still completely bullshit for him because he doesn't block shots. But this is why I wasn't keen on really adding him in 12-team leagues, because he's no good. He's finished as a player. He's a contributor in minimal minutes, but honestly, he hurts the team more than he helps in most situations, and I don't think it'll take long for Dallas to figure that out most of the time. You can do better in a 12-team league than David Lee. Wes Matthews is really starting to come on now. 21 and 5, 2 steals and a 3. If he's available, which he probably isn't, you make sure you go and add him now. And JJ Barea got hot. He went 6 of 9 for 17 points, added 4 dimes and 3 assists, but we're looking real deep for him. While Chandler Parsons, 17, 3 and 3. That's solid but not spectacular, as is Dirk's 19 points. Ray Felton, another 25 minutes, only had 6 points, but the 5 assists are still valuable. He is a nice streaming option on a night like this, like a Tuesday, when there were limited games. He can be added and he can produce value, but it's hard to just hold him continually because he won't be in your 10 best players. He'll be that bench guy, and on a full schedule you won't play him, but on a light night, sure, and you might get 12 points out of him. You might get a 3 and a steal and 5 assists or 6 assists, and it can be really valuable. The Atlanta Hawks and the Golden State Warriors, an overtime game. The Warriors, without Steph, without Andre Iguodala, got the victory. Draymond Green just hit a stupid 3 in the last minute of overtime. Just ridiculous. And that put them up and kept them up for the victory. Millsap, 19-7-4, 3 steals and 4 blocks. His night was soured by 5 of 17 shooting, but still just big numbers. That's huge defensive contribution for Millsap there. Al Horford went 17-9, while Kent Bazemore, 15-9 with a 1-1. That's a really, obviously, it's a really nice performance from Bazemore. He's not a must-own guy, but looks to have turned it around the last couple, so I'm happy with going and owning him again. Kyle Korver had 11-7, but key was the 3 triples and the 3 steals. He'd been really terrible up until then, so he's a back-end ownable guy. And Dennis Schroeder, who was preferred to Jeff Teague down the stretch, he had 17 points and 9 assists. This is after playing 13 minutes in the last game, so he is going to be very up and down, while Teague went 7 points with 6 assists in his 24 minutes. Knowing what Budenholzer is going to do with the point guards is not an easy task. Majority of the time, it's going to be Teague, but there are going to be nights when Schroeder puts up numbers. And we saw him being a top 50 player for a stretch, and now in the last week, he's 193rd. And that's the issue with him. To me, in a 12-team league, if I'm in a playoff fight, I don't want to hold Schroeder because, yeah, you'll get this game, but the next game he'll play 17 minutes and score 6 points. And over the course of the week, it's not going to work out in your favor, I don't think. We've seen a few times before that Schroeder will play over Teague down the stretch, but it doesn't mean shit for the next game. Now, Teague will go back and he'll start and he'll play 30 minutes. It's not like we are giving it to Schroeder and he is our starter now. That's not what Budenholzer does. And it might happen. I'm a bit doubtful that it's going to happen at this point in the season that we're all of a sudden going to see Schroeder playing 30 and Teague playing 18 on a regular basis. And that's why it is hard. Look, I love Schroeder. I love him. I love his potential. I love his fantasy upside. But that's why it's hard for me to go own him, because I just don't see him getting a consistent 27 to 30 minute role. And I'm probably in opposition to a lot of people who think, yeah, you got to own him. I can't get behind it. The Warriors, Draymond, 15-13, 8 assists, 4 steals, 1 block, and 2 triples. Really hurting your percentage at the moment, though. 6 of 16 from the field, but massive counting stats. Andy Bogut was massive too. 31 minutes, 19-7 with 2 steals and a block on 8 of 9 shooting. I've spoken about him plenty of times. In the minutes, he's awesome, but the minutes are the thing that's a worry. Klay was good as well, 26-6-5 with 6 triples. 8 of 27 is not an ideal number from the field, and that would have been quite harmful. While Sean Livingston started in place of Steph and went 6 of 7 with 2 steals and 34. Now, Steph is going to be back in the next game, most likely. He said, yeah, he's going to play. So Livingston's appeal was limited to this one game, and even then, it wasn't that high. Harry Barnes had a massive opportunity to take on some extra usage and didn't succeed. 12-8 with 2 assists is fine, but it's not enough for me to own him in 12-team leagues, and I just don't really ever see a situation where that's going to be the case for this season. The Brooklyn Nets and the Los Angeles Lakers. Thad Young, 19-15 with a steal. Just big, big numbers from Thad this season. He's been awesome. Had someone question my position of him on my Dynasty Monster board. I think I had him at 90 or 91, given how well he's played this season. And I take that completely on board, that criticism, and think, yeah, maybe I had Thad a little bit younger. He is 27. He's not all that old, but he's sort of in that mid-prime region. I don't know if he gets better than this. I think he probably starts to regress in a season or so. And my thought process to having him dropped behind where he currently is, you know, Brooklyn, you would expect, you know, we'll start to get some better players in. This might be his best opportunity to have his best season this year. Yeah, they might have someone else coming in next year. They might get a free agent. They might do whatever they do. Something might happen with Brooklyn. I'm not sure that he can continue to play at this level for the next 3 seasons. But I could be very wrong. Bojan Bogdanovic, he probably should be owned in 12-team leagues now. 18-7, 3 assists, a block, and a 3. He will have bad nights. He will have good nights. And at the moment, the good nights are outweighing the bad nights. Wayne Ellington was back from his concussion. Well, it wasn't a concussion, because if it was a concussion, he wouldn't have played. 10 points with 2 triples and 2 steals. He's a deeper league sort of player. And Markel Brown, 13 minutes. He's just not working out at the moment, so he has no real appeal. Don Sloan, 11 points with 6 assists. I think he's still a 12-team league guy. That's not awesome, but 6 assists and a steal is pretty hard to come by. I do like him still as a back-end 12-team league guy. And recent 10-day signee, Sean Kilpatrick, played 21 minutes and had 8 points. For what reason, I don't know. But we don't need to go and add him too many places. Brook Lopez went 23-7-4 as well in the loss against the Lakers. I talked about D'Angelo Russell already. What about Roy Hibbert? 14-5 with 2 assists and a steal in 26 minutes. Do you go and add Roy Hibbert? The answer is no. Julius Randle had 14-13 in 31 minutes. A very Julius Randle-ish sort of line. Subpar percentages. 1 assist, 1 steal, no blocks. Yeah, that's fine. You own him, but he's a real back-end guy. Probably the worst guy on your roster most of the time. And Jordan Clarkson had 16-7-7. Kobe was out of this game. He's going to be back for the next game. So Anthony Brown started. He had 2 points in 26 minutes. The Lakers also will be without Lou Williams, who hurt his hamstring in this one, and Larry Nance, who's going to be rested in every back-to-back set now moving forward for the rest of the season. Nance is not a fantasy factor, and Williams probably shouldn't be. And if you're holding him in a 12-team league, this is a great sign to drop him, I think. All right, that is the games from Tuesday. I'm going to take a quick break. You're going to hear a word from one of our sponsors, and then I'm going to be back to look at the 11 games on Wednesday from DFS perspective.
This is the part with just the guitar. While we wait on the bass and drums, I'll sing of love and you from afar. Well, here they come and now, me and the sky run away. As we hit the halftime break, the chorus let you know you can't see what I see. Just like a moment in the sun.
break, we had a comment come through on the YouTube video about my take on D'Angelo Russell. So I thought I'd address that. I want to bring up that comment now if I can. Just give me one sec. I'm going to bring that up because I think it's always important to discuss things on podcasts and on shows. And that's why part of the reason why I do the live shows is because I think it's interesting to be able to get people's live takes as I'm making comments and be able to respond to them. And that's exactly what's happening here. So sorry, it's just taking me a little bit of time to bring this back up. So one sec. All right. It comes from Nico's Vault. He says, come on now, Russell has had plenty of opportunity to shine. I know it feels better as a fan to say that he was held back until tonight, but let's not pretend that Russell's brilliance has been locked in a dungeon by Byron. Russell is still a slow, turnover-prone kid with some raw talent. Yeah, some of that is true. I agree with most of that. He is still slow, he is still turnover-prone, and he has raw talent. I'm not saying that if Byron Scott had have started D'Angelo Russell, he'd be dropping 39 a night. It's far from what I'm saying. My problem is that he never got an opportunity. He was yanked anytime he made a mistake. He wouldn't be able to play clutch situations, so he couldn't learn them. Byron Scott wouldn't speak to him, wouldn't teach him, wouldn't explain to him what the issue was, and that stunts development as well. He had opportunity to shine, so to speak. He started. He didn't finish any games. He couldn't play in the crunch time, so to speak. He wasn't able to get out there and play in those times. He was jerked around. Anytime he made any sort of, not even mistake, or just something, he was taken off the court. And that's what my issue is with Scott and the way that he's managed him. I didn't think that Russell was going to be a great option this year at all, but I thought they should have given him the opportunity to at least play and learn, not sit him on the bench and play him 25 minutes a night and play him not in crunch time and play him not play him with the foundation pieces of your team in Clarkson and Randall, which he hasn't done for big stretches of this season. That's where Russell needs to play. And now that he's been given the opportunity to play and have the ball in his hands more and close out games, I think it's working out better for him. So Nico's Vault, I really appreciate the comment. I do disagree with you on a couple of things there, but that's why I like doing the live shows and getting some of these comments to come in and talk about them, because yeah, maybe I seem a little bit aggressive in my dislike of Byron Scott as a coach, and I don't put everything on Scott in terms of Russell's development, but I put a massive amount of it on him because he's been horrendous with dealing with him, with dealing with young players in general, with dealing with this team and rotations. It's been terrible, and Russell's ability to shine has been limited by Scott, and I don't think that you can deny that Scott has been no factor in Russell's slow start to his career. I was not a Russell fan in summer league. I thought, yep, he looks too slow. He can only go to his left. He's got no explosion. He's got no athleticism. I've said all those things, and you just said it there. But Scott didn't give it a chance to develop. Didn't teach it. Didn't do anything that needed to happen with Russell. And that's my main issue with him. So thanks, Nikos, for that comment. I do really appreciate it, and I do like having those discussions. So thank you very much. Now, on to DFS. There are 11 games. Let's get smashed straight into them. The Bulls and the Magic is the first game. The Magic favored by 3. The total is 210 points. Evan Fournier is questionable, I reckon. He's more on the doubtful side of questionable, to be honest. Taj Gibson is questionable. I am sure he is more on the doubtful side of questionable as well. If you are a Basketball Monster member, when you go to the daily projection site, you can see we've got our what-if scenarios, and you can go to Chicago and pull the drop-down menu, and there's an option that says Taj Gibson out, and that adjusts everyone's minutes. You can go to Orlando, and you can click the option there, and it says Evan Fournier out, and you can see how it's going to impact, because it will have an impact. Let's start with the point guards. 5,300 for Alfred Payton. My trust level in Scott Skiles is pretty low. This is great when you're going up against Derrick Rose. But will it be Lord Alfred? Will it be CJ Watson? Will it be Brandon Jennings? The answer is probably going to be with 11 games, and it's going to be none of them in my DFS lineup. Derrick Rose, on the other hand, at 7,200, we need to hear if there's going to be any sort of minutes limit. So let's check back during the day. If he's only going to play 25 minutes, we don't want anything to do with him. If he's going to play 30, maybe I'll look at him, but I probably won't against a Magic team who defense-wise has been okay against point guards. They definitely haven't been the turnstile that what Rose has been. At shooting guard, Victor Oladipo, he'd want to bounce back after that poor performance. He's got a pretty nice matchup to do it in here. 7,000. The game's projected to be close, so hopefully Skiles won't have to sit guys, because apparently when a game's over, you just take 10 minutes off all your starters and don't let them play through any situation when you're down by 8 points or so. Oladipo, at $7,000, it feels a bit expensive for me. Evan Fournier at $5,400, I'd love it if he played. I just don't think he's going to play. $4,400 for Etuan Moore feels a bit expensive. He's been okay, but only averaging 16.7 across his last three, 22 across his last five. It's not quite enough at $4,400. If you believe Devin Marble's going to get 24 minutes again, he's a minimum salary guy, so get all on there. But if anyone had Devin Marble in their DFS lineups, please send me a tweet. I would be amazed. Small forwards, Mike Dunleavy is at $3,900. The minutes are definitely getting there for him, so I don't mind it in a tournament sense, but there's no cash reliability. $41 for Dougie McDermott, similar. He's a tournament option too. And Mario Hezonja at $3,700, definitely no cash reliability. And he's been stinking, to be honest, even as a starter. Don't think I want to use him, even in a cash setting. Aaron Gordon was poor. The foul trouble really bothered him. He still put up 20 DFS points though. And at $6,500, I reckon if he gets 30 minutes, you'd know he's getting 30-plus points. He is fine to use against a Bulls front court who is going to be playing Pau Gasol and Bobby Portis and Cameron Bairstow and Cristiano Felizio. There is points to be had by this front court coming out the wazoo. If Taj is out as expected, Bobby Portis at $4,400 becomes one of the better plays in cash and in tournaments. Ersan Ilyasova at $4,200. Could not have predicted that he would have had that sort of game, so that's there's no cash game value there. It's always just, hey, maybe in a tournament, maybe he goes off, but yeah, again, I think that most of the time that's a losing proposition. Nick Vucevic also gets this weak Bulls front court. He's at $8,100. He's been limited, as I mentioned earlier, less than 30 minutes in the last three games. Give him 35 minutes here, and you've got 40 points, and I think that he's a really good value play. If you think that this game's going to be a blowout one way or the other, then steer clear of most of the Magic players. Pau Gasol at $9,300. It's pretty expensive. He had only 36 today, but I think a lot's going to have to go through him. He's going to have to play a couple of extra minutes if Gibson is out. At $9,300, can he get 45 points? Well, he's already been averaging 45 across his last five. He's averaging 47 across his last three. It's definitely not a terrible investment to go and use Pau Gasol. The Charlotte Hornets and the Philadelphia 76ers is the next game. Injury-wise, we had a couple in Philadelphia. Jahlil Okafor is questionable with his shin soreness. Hollis Thompson is questionable with his illness. He's missed the last two games. Okafor has missed the last one. They're the two we need to check on. Spencer Hawes is out for the next two games as well for the Hornets. Ish Smith, he's at $6,600. He's been playing a lot better. This is a nice matchup for him. At $6,600, do you feel confident with him? I don't feel confident. I think you can probably find a better option at point guard, but he's definitely not horrific. And Kemba Walker at $8,200, much like the Phoenix matchup, a great spot for him here, but a back-to-back and a blowout potential, does he get his minutes limited? Is the chances of him putting up 48 points in 30 minutes like he did against Phoenix, is that replicable? I'd have to say probably not. That's a lot of points in very few minutes. Can he do that again? I'm not all that confident in spending $8,200 on him, especially when there's such a stack of good $10,000 point guards on the board. Yes, it's $2,000 extra, but I do think that there's a case to be made for looking at some of those more expensive guys over someone like Kemba Walker. Isaiah Cannon at $3,700, he's been playing extra minutes with Thompson out, but hasn't really been producing, so he's only a tournament option only. At the shooting guard position, Jeremy Lamb's at $3,600. No. Nick Batum at $6,200. Really good game from him today. Put up 31 points at $6,200. Yeah, I'm okay with using him against Philadelphia. I think that he's a nice cash option. He's a decent tournament option. Courtney Lee and Jeremy Lin, no thanks. Small forwards, Bob Cove is at $4,900. He's averaging 25 across his last three. That's pretty impressive. At that sort of salary, if Hollis Thompson's out, you almost guarantee that he's going to get 30 minutes. So I do like him if Thompson's out. If Thompson sits, then I'm not quite as happy with that, with using Bob Cove. At power forward, Nerlens Noel, if Okafor is out at $6,100, hopefully he'd get to 30 minutes and 31, 32 minutes, then he'd be a really good option. So I'd look to use him if Okafor happens to be out. Marvin Williams at $6,000, good matchup here for him. limited against Phoenix, but I think that he's a guy you can look at, especially when he's averaging 32 across his last three, including just a 19-point game today. He can be looked at. And Jeremy Grant, if Okafor is out, he is priced at 5,100. He's averaging 29 across his last three, and only two of them have been decent minutes. You're looking at probably 30-point upside for Jeremy Grant, maybe even higher. So if Okafor is out, he is someone that I would be very, very keen on. At the center position, Okafor himself at 6,300. Yeah, I don't mind him in this matchup. You'd have to have full assurance that he's going to play his regular minutes, and then 30 points is definitely on the board. Al Jefferson dropped 29 today, and at 5,300, that looks sort of appealing, but I just don't imagine that Al Jefferson's going to be able to put up so many points in so few minutes again. The Portland Trailblazers and the Boston Celtics. The Celtics are favored by 5. The total is a big one. It's 218 points. Injury-wise, there's not much to really look at here. At point guard, Isaiah Thomas is at 7,800. Not a great matchup, honestly. Recently, the Portland Trailblazers have been limiting point guards and reducing their output. So 7,800 for Isaiah, given he's only averaging 33 across his last five, doesn't feel like a smart investment. And speaking of smart, Marcus Smart is at 5,100. He has really struggled to reach that value as well. Dame Lillard, on the other side, he's got the Celtics point guard defense to contend with. He's at 9,300. That's expensive. Yes, he's averaging 41 across his last five games, but the Celtics defense is a real factor, and it's something that I'll probably steer clear of when there are other nice, expensive point guard options on the board. At shooting guard, CJ McCollum is at 7,100, not quite giving us value recently. Probably steer clear of him. Alan Crabb's at 3,800, and that looks appealing for a tournament, but his highest score in his last five has been 19. He's just not all that appealing to me. Avery Bradley at 5,400. Not against the Blazers either. They've been really good defensively, and some of that's coming from Gerald Henderson. Overall, none of the shooting guards in this match really get me too excited. At small forward, Jay Crowder's been awesome. He's at 6,400. He dropped 37 in the last game, 34 across his last five. I feel relatively comfortable with using him in cash and in tournament action. Elfrid Aminu, I don't feel confident at all. Evan Turner has been good, but he's at 5,800 now. It feels too high. I don't want to spend that on Evan Turner. Yes, he's averaging 28 across his last three, but it just feels too high for me. I could be wrong, but I'm not all that interested. Power forwards. Jared Sullinger is at 6,100. He had a little bit of a quiet game in the last one, but he'd been putting up some pretty decent numbers before that. He's averaging over 31 across his last five. I think 31 is definitely in play again here. This is what we're sort of projecting him for. I like it. Eddie Davis is at 4,500. Really been smashing teams out defensively, but there's a big risk associated with him because you need him to get blocks in limited minutes. And that can be a tough thing to do, but he's not a bad guy to look at in a tournament because if he gets them in bulk, then it's big numbers. Yanis Jarepko is a minimum salary guy, but he's not producing. Amir Johnson, actually under the radar, he's averaging 26 points across his last three. He dropped 25 in the last one. He's at 4,000. Do you look at him? It's a risky proposition, for sure. Maybe you look at it in a tournament, but I don't think I'm overly sold on using him, despite his recent solid play. Now, Myers Leonard and Mason Plumlee, they get the advantage of playing against the Celtics front court, who's been a real bonanza for opposition big men. And they're playing pretty well themselves. Leonard had 31 points in the last one. He's at 3,600. I don't really trust him for cash, but if I was ever going to use him in cash, it's going to be in this matchup. And in tournaments, I think it's an awesome play at 3,600. Mason Plumlee has been a solid 24-point guy recently. At 5,200, that's not quite there, but the Celtics bump is going to be a factor for him. I think he plays some extra minutes here and hopefully is able to put up 27, 30 points and be a consistent sort of cash game option. Tyler Zeller is not someone that I want to use as an option. The Utah Jazz and the Toronto Raptors. The Raptors are favored by 5.5. Kyle Lowry missed the last game due to rest. He should be back. And Trevor Booker missed the last game due to a personal issue. He will likely be back as well. At point guard, Shelvin Mack is at 3,600. He had 24 in the last game. He looked a little bit better. That's still a great tournament price at 3,600 for a starting point guard who could get 30 minutes. He is in play. 9,000 for Kyle Lowry. The Jazz, we know the defense and the pace for them is an issue, but recently point guards haven't been restricted that much against them. So at 9,000, when Lowry's averaging 47 across his last five, 51 across his last three, he's fresh off a day's rest. I think that that's a very, very good spot for Kyle Lowry here. Corey Joseph, no thanks. Hal Neto and Trey Burke's not even going to be in the rotation from what we're hearing from Quinn Snyder. So, yeah, not much to talk about with him. At shooting guards, DeMar... Not shooting guards, shooting guard. DeMar DeRozan, 7,700. I wouldn't mind it, but not in this matchup. The shooting guards have had a real tough time against the Jazz, so I'll leave him out of it. Rod Hood is at 5,900, hasn't been really getting close to value recently, only a 27 average across his last five. He needs to be a little bit better than that. Terrence Ross is a tournament option only. He's at 4,100. He dropped 30 in the last game, but again, the Jazz is going to provide, or the Jazz are going to provide a problem for him along the wing. Speaking of wing players, Gordie Hayward at 7,300 with the small forwards, not quite getting up to value, only averaging 28 across his last three. You can find better options on the other games. And James Johnson, who has been starting for the Raptors and producing nothing, he will continue along that track. The power forwards, Derek Favors at 7,700, really, really like him here. He's averaging 37 across his last five, 36 across his last three. He's a consistent 35-plus guy, definitely fine with rolling him out. Patrick Patterson is really in contention for the do the least with the most title for the year. He's averaging 10.6 points in his last three games in 32 minutes. It is horrific. Trevor Booker, Luis Scola, and Trey Lyles, he has a massive game in the last one, Trey Lyles, but with Booker back, his minutes are likely to be reduced somewhat, and he's unlikely to put up 33 fantasy points again. Rudy Gobert is at 6,800. That salary has come down significantly. 6,800 is not a big amount to spend on him. Now, he hasn't really been getting it going lately. A couple of big games, but a couple of stinkers. 6,800 against the Raptors, I'm okay with throwing him into a tournament. Definitely don't want to use him in a cash game at this point. But in a tournament, you know, 50 points is an upside for him. Jonas Valanciunas at 6,200. The minutes are a real pain in the ass at the moment, so he is not my center of choice. Washington Wizards and the Minnesota Timberwolves are up next. The Wizards are favored by 3.5. The total is 220. If you haven't caught up on all your Minnesota Timberwolves news lately, Andre Miller has been officially waived, and Kevin Martin has been officially waived as well. They haven't signed anywhere yet, but they are both likely to sign with the San Antonio Spurs. That does nothing for their fantasy value. So there's no 12, 14 team, 16 team league scoop probably. The only thing I can say is that with Martin, maybe it means that Manu Ginobili's ball sack is still not quite right, and he might have to miss a little bit of extra time, and we might see Martin play a decent role off the bench for your, say, 16 team leagues in the short term, but that's probably about it. We're talking DFS here, 6,700 for Rick Rubio. 6,700? John Wall, there's been some big point guard battles against John Wall, some big production against him. 6,700 is, it feels a little bit expensive given what he's been doing recently, Rubio. Everything looks, like projections look really good for him in this one. I'm a little bit weary, but I'll definitely look at him in a tournament. Johnny Wall at 10,000, love it here. He's averaging 48 across his last five, 51 across his last three. His lowest score in his last five has been 36. You'll see as we get through the other games, there's a stack of high-priced point guards around, and he is one of the best ones. Shooting guards, Brad Beal. Not up to it for me at the moment. 5,400 for him. Hasn't really been able to crack 20 points much recently at all. I would rather spend 200 less and take Zach LaVine, who's been getting, on average, 37 minutes across his last three games, averaging 28 points. And at 5,200, that's just fine by me. Sam Mitchell last game was supposed to start Tayshaun Prince. I forgot to mention this. In their rotation, bullshit, whatever. He didn't. Prince didn't play at all. Let's hope that he doesn't go back to Prince in this one, but to me, it doesn't matter at the moment if LaVine is starting or not. He's going to play 33 minutes on most nights, unless it's a blowout. Andy Wiggins is at 6,400. I will only consider him if he comes under 6,000. There's no interest for me there, nor is there much in Allen Anderson, Garrett Temple, or Gary Neal, because he's been ruled out for the next two games. Small forwards, Shabazz is at 4,100. He is always a good tournament option. He's been playing some extra minutes. He's averaging 22 points across his last five. And at 4,100, that's even not bad cash game value. His lowest score across his last five has been 17. And that's not terrible at 4,100. He's a name to look at if you're looking for a cheap player. Otto Porter is at 5,100. I reckon you can do a lot better than him despite the T-Wolves giving up some pretty nice numbers to small forwards. Power forwards, Gorgie Dieng. 6,400. The minutes in the last game were blowout related, not Sam Mitchell related, so we feel a little bit better there. But Dieng missed practice due to a personal issue. Let's hope he's ready to play. 30-point average across his last three. 6,400 feels a little bit high, to be honest. I'm not sure I want to use him. I would rather spend $1,000 and use his opponent, Markieff Morris, who put up 42 in the last game. He's averaging 25 across the last five. And I assume by most of your standards, he's been shit in the last five games. He's still averaging 25 DFS points. And at 5,400, if he's been as terrible as what most people think he has been, I'm very, very happy to use him at 5,400. I think that, you know, 28, 29 points should come relatively comfortably for him. And let's hope he gets the starting role and the decent minutes again, but I think that he will. And I'm pretty sure they've invested heavily in Markieff Morris, and they're going to give him an opportunity. And after last game, why wouldn't they? Jared Dudley and Nene, there's no interest in them. If Gorgui Dieng happens to sit, Adrian Payne at minimum salary would become someone to throw into a tournament because he might just get numbers through sheer attrition, through just actual playing and rebounds falling on his head and grabbing them. That's basically all he can do. Karl Anthony Towns is at 8,900. Gortat has been really limiting opposition centers lately. If Dieng is out at 8,900, I would look at Towns. 8,900 it's pretty expensive. Does he get 45 points? That's sort of what you're expecting him to do. And I don't think that he's too far off that, to be honest. He's probably a 41, 42 point sort of player. But I reckon you can probably get a better value somewhere else. Marcin Gortat is at 7,300. He was dominant in the last game. He's averaging 35 across his last five games. The Timberwolves do defend centers pretty well with Towns there, so you can use him, but I reckon you can find better players. The New Orleans Pelicans and the Houston Rockets, there is no spread for this one because Anthony Davis is listed as questionable. Now, he participated fully in practice, so it looks like he's going to be ready to go, but obviously we need to hear a confirmation of that or a change in his status throughout the day. At the point guard spot, Jrue Holiday is at 7,700. That's pretty expensive. Pat Beverley's a really good defender, and in the past, he's given Jrue Holiday some issues. Not sure I want to use Jrue at 7,700. Definitely don't want to use Norris Cole. I just don't believe in him, especially against the Rockets. Not a good spot. And Pat Beverley himself at 4,800. On the flip side, the Pelicans' point guard defense has been awesome too, so I'm not going to be using him. And by the way, Ty Lawson bought out by the Rockets, if you haven't caught up with that one. Don't think that Ty Lawson's going to be much of a fantasy factor wherever he lands. Maybe if he went to Brooklyn, maybe if he went to Philadelphia. Even in Philadelphia, I think they'd give Ish Smith more of the playing time than Lawson. I'm not running and stashing Lawson in any 12-team leagues in the hope that he finds his mojo. He has been an abject disaster this season. Personal problems have definitely caused a big toll on his ability to produce. At shooting guard, Eric Gordon's at 5,300. I think he's a beautiful play here. He dropped 40 in the last game. That won't happen again, but 25 feels like it's comfortably within reach. Jim Harden on the other side, 10,700. You're paying up for him, but you're paying up for almost a guarantee of 50 points. So he is definitely a good guy to look at as well. Small forwards, Trevor Ariza is the one you want to look at, 7,500. He's averaging 37 across his last five. Had a bonkers 49 in the last game. Really taking to playing sort of that power forward position more often in that small ball lineup. He's been awesome. I think that you have to consider using him. The Pelican small forwards, Alonzo G, cool. Luke Babbitt, nope. Power forwards, Josh Smith is really bad at the moment. He's minimum salary, but even then, it doesn't really entice me. Anthony Davis, 10,200. He should be back. He should be playing. He should be at 35 plus minutes, and he's going to get a Rockets bump. Plenty of people are going to be steering clear of him. I know that. I think he's an awesome guy to have a look at here. I think that there is massive 60-point upside for Davis here. And at 10,200, I reckon he's a really good guy to look at. If Davis is out, Ryan Anderson at 5,800 is almost the must-play of must-plays. He dropped 54 in the last game. His numbers rise significantly when Davis is out, but it all depends on if Davis is playing, and all signs point to Davis being able to play. Donatas Motiejunas at 3,500. He played 19 minutes in the last game. He had 15 DFS points. It's a positive matchup for him. Maybe if you're looking for a cheap power forward in a tournament, you look at him and think, okay, does he get 22 minutes here? Because Clint Capela could be out. And maybe he produces. I don't know. It feels like a real, real long shot. But and you're throwing darts at a board. But there's a little bit of reasoning behind my dart throwing there. Centers, Dwight Howard. I like him here. He's at 8,100. He's averaging 41 across his last three. He's got to take on Kendrick Perkins, Alexei Zintsev, for as much as I love him. Howard should be able to play, do pretty much what he wants down low, grab the rebounds, block some shots, score. 40 points should be what he's aiming for, and I imagine that he'll get pretty close to that. The next game, the Sacramento Kings and the Memphis Grizzlies. There is no spread for this. The Kings have got a couple of injuries. Rajon Rondo is probable with his thumb problem, and Rudy Gay is currently questionable with his shoulder. Gay missed the last couple of games with that shoulder problem. At point guard, Mike Conley, really limited in minutes lately. And at 6,800, I'm not going to be spending up on him, despite the fact that he's playing against Rondo, and Rondo's defense is shaky at best. Mario Chalmers at 46, no thanks. If Rondo happens to miss, 5,400 for Darren Collison is an awesome guy to look at. And Rondo at 9,000, not against the Grizzlies defense. I don't want to use him here. At shooting guard, look at this group of shooting guards. Lance Stevenson, Marco Bellinelli, Ben McLemore, Seth Curry, James Anderson. You can find your shooting guards in another game. Small forwards, Gay, we don't know if he's going to play. He's at 7,000. I probably wouldn't use him anyway. Who I would use is Matt Barnes. He's at 5,200. He dropped 33 in the last game. He's averaging 25 over the last five. He's a little bit up and down, so there's a bit of risk with him in cash, but I'm relatively confident with him. The other tournament guy I look at is PJ Harrison, who's at 3,600. Two out of the last three games, he's played 30 minutes. He's averaging 19 points across his last three. And at 3,600, 19 points is 5x. If he gets 20 points, you're pretty happy with that sort of production. So not a cash game option because he can be shit because he's not great. But he's looked a fair bit better. Omri Caspi, you would have thought he would have played big minutes with Gay missing. Didn't happen, so I'm hesitant to use him here. The power forwards, Zach Randolph at 6,600. It feels just a little bit high, just marginally high. Now, it is a really good matchup, so that would sway me to using him a little bit, but otherwise it feels a little bit inflated. Jermichael Green at minimum salary, he hasn't been able to get anything done recently. Willie Cauley-Stein, no. Quincy Ace is the interesting one. At 3,500, he got the minutes bump with Gay out. He put up 24 in the last game in 28 minutes. I do not trust it at all, but maybe if you're constructing 50 tournament lineups, you put him in one, and at minimum salary, it might work out for you. At center, it is all about Boogie. He is at 10,900. That is very expensive. This is not a great spot against the Grizzlies, who do slow things down a little bit. Not sure I'm going to use Boogie at 10,900. The Birdman, who started and played 22 minutes in the last game, he's at minimum salary. I don't hate it. I think that he's an okay guy to have a look at. I think that 20 points, it's probably his ceiling, but at 3,500, 20 points is all right. I don't dislike it completely, but I'm definitely not in love with it. Indiana versus Milwaukee. The Pacers are favored by 2. The total is 202.5 points. Brandon Wright on the Grizzlies, he can be dropped in standard leagues. He's not going to play with that knee issue. John Henson, I don't think he's playing. He's doubtful with his knee problem. And Michael Carter-Williams is questionable with his own knee soreness. That complicates the point guard situation. If Carter-Williams is out, Jared Bayless at 4,300 becomes a really, really solid option. If Carter-Williams is playing, I'm not using Carter-Williams. I'm not using Bayless either. George Hill on the other side, 5,700. This is not a good matchup going up against the Bucks. If Carter-Williams is out, that changes slightly. But still, George Hill's not an awesome player anyway. 6,300 for Monte Ellis. He's been solid, but not spectacular. I reckon you can do better in other areas. And Chris Middleton, he has been awesome. He's averaging 43 across his last three. But the thing is, you've got to pay 7,900 for Chris Middleton. It feels very expensive. I reckon you can probably do better than 7,900 on Chris Middleton. For as good as he's been, that it is expensive. OJ Mayo started the last game, played 13 minutes, and put up 0.9 fantasy points. I am done with OJ Mayo, despite his minimum salary. He has looked like a big turd lately. Small forwards, big matchup. Paul George, 8,700. Giannis Antetokounmpo at 8,400. Giannis has been outperforming George comfortably. I would be more comfortable using Giannis at the moment, given his ability to contribute in multiple areas and his ability to actually hit shots more than what Paul George is doing. Not that he's a big shooter, Giannis, but yeah, he's converting more of his attempts, whether they're by layups or dunks or whatever they are. 300 less as well for Giannis. I think that he is a fine guy. I don't think either are a great must play guys, but they're both definitely in consideration to be used. At power forward, we're looking at Miles Turner, whose production has been off lately. He's at 5,400. It's a really good matchup going up against the Bucks in a tournament. I'm all for it because he could explode. The other guy talking about exploding, Jabari Parker, has been awesome lately. He's at 6,000, so the salary's risen. I'm fine with using him. He's basically 30-plus points every night. Definitely a guy to look at. At center, Jan Mahinmi, last couple of games have been limited with foul issues. He's at 4,800, a positive matchup for him here. I think that you can look at him and use him at 4,800 with a marginal amount of confidence. His highest score in his last five is only 26, so that doesn't give you much tournament upside. But in a cash game, I feel like that 24 points is probably what he can do. Now, the fouls are a concern, definitely, but is Miles Plumlee going to bother him foul-wise? I don't think so. I'm okay with Mahinmi. Greg Munro, no chance, given what Kidd's doing with his minutes. And 3,700 for Miles Plumlee, a great tournament play, and that's probably about it. Detroit and San Antonio. I tweeted out a tweet before that the Pistons have won their last four games by a combined margin of 52 points. That is really massive. And now they play the Spurs. So good luck with that streak continuing. The Spurs are favored by 10.5 points. The total is 200.5. Stan Johnson is doubtful. And Matt Bonner is probable. That's not going to have much impact fantasy-wise. Tony Parker's been really, really impressive lately. He's averaging 29 across his last five. He's at 5,300. He's a guy that I don't imagine his ownership would be very high, and I reckon you can get some use out of him. Reggie Jackson at 6,800. It just feels that couple $500 too expensive, so I'll probably leave him for someone else. And Patty Mills has not been getting it done lately, only averaging 17 across his last five. Shooting guards, Danny Green at 4,400, a tournament option and never a cash game option. And I think you could almost say the same for Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, although even in this one, in a tournament, I don't love it with Green and Kawhi Leonard switching onto him. Speaking of Kawhi Leonard, we look at the shooting guards, not shooting guards, the small forwards. Kawhi is at 8,000. He's averaging 43 across his last five, 41 across his last three. His minimum score has been 38 across his last five. That's consistency. $8,000. Kawhi, fine. Yep, I think he's a guy you want to look at in a lot of different lineups. Toby Harris at 5,800. That salary is appealing. The matchup is horrible. And I'll say the same with Marcus Morris as well. Probably steer clear of both of those gentlemen. Power forwards, LaMarcus Aldridge is at 7,300. The Pistons have been pretty good at defending power forwards, so not sure that I'm all that keen on Aldridge, but I definitely don't hate him. He's averaging 35 across his last five. I reckon you can do better, but don't completely write him off. David West and Boris Diaw don't need to be used, I don't think, unless we see that Tim Duncan's miraculously out. Andre Drummond is at 8,700. There is zero chance that I'm using Andre Drummond against the Spurs because we know Greg Popovich is going to hack players. We know he does it. He hacks guys all the time. That is going to limit Drummond's time on the court. I don't think he gets enough minutes to put up 40 points at 8,700. What it does do is it brings in Aaron Baines, who's at 3,500. In a tournament, you throw Aaron Baines in, he plays 22 minutes. Can he get 22 points, 25 points? Yep, absolutely. And he's playing against his former team. I think that Aaron Baines is a very, very sneaky tournament play. It requires Drummond to get hacked, which I think is basically a guarantee, and for Baines to play well. And I think, but when Baines, we've seen it, whenever he plays well. I think it's a move that could really separate you in a tournament. Timmy Duncan at 5,200, I don't want to spend on him. He's too up and down. The Lakers and the Denver Nuggets. The Nuggets are favored by 7.5 points. The total is 211.5. We know that Kobe's going to be back for the Lakers. We know Lou Williams is out. We know Larry Nance is out. On the Denver side of things, Emmanuel Mudiay is probable with a calf issue, and Ken Fareed is dealing with lower back soreness, something that's been bothering him basically all season. D'Angelo Russell, 5,300, coming off a huge game. I think you got to use him again. That is not a big salary at all. Basically, it's saying, can he get 25 fantasy points? And you'd say yes. He's averaging 33 across his last five. He's averaging 40 across his last three. If you don't have him in a lineup, I get the feeling you're going to lose. I think he should be in pretty much all of your lineups. Mudiay, I'm worried about DJ Augustine, so I'm not using him. Augustine at 3,600, great tournament option as well, because if he plays 30 minutes, there's 30-point fantasy upside there, and we're talking a 9x value. So he is. You could put Russell and Augustine as the backcourt and get tremendous value out of both of those guys, I reckon, in a tournament. Shooting guard, Will Barton's at 6,000. It doesn't get much better in terms of matchup. He's going to get the extra shots with Gallinari, not there. But is he good enough to take advantage of it? He wasn't in the last game, only 19 points in 34 minutes. He is not a cash game option for me. He is too unreliable, and I still don't trust him as being good. Gary Harris at 4,800. I'm spending $1,200 less than I am on Barton. I feel more comfortable using him. I think I could use him in a cash game, and I could be okay with him in a tournament, and I think 25 points feels reasonable for Gary Harris. Jordy Clarkson's at 6,000, easily outperforming Will Barton. Now you're paying the same price, and he's been averaging 30 points across his last five, 29 across his last three. Fine with using Jordan Clarkson. At 6,300 for Kobe Bryant, I'll let someone else do that. Small forwards, Jakar Sampson started the last game, played 30 minutes, put up 7.9 points. He's minimum salary, so you look at him in a tournament. His highest score in his last five is 7.9. His lowest score is minus one. He is not a good player at all. But in a tournament, maybe something goes right. Maybe he drops 20, and at 3,500, that might work out for you. Maybe he drops 25 out of the whatever, out of his ass. Maybe that works. Not much else small forward-wise in this game. Power forwards, Ken Faried has been on a roll. The back does scare me. At 6,100, he's averaging 37 across his last three. Really, really playing well. And against the Lakers, it's a great matchup for a power forward. You need to read the information that comes out on Basketball Monster, Twitter account, at BaskMonster, to see what is actually happening with his injury, what sort of talk there is. He's going to be limited. But if he gets 27 minutes, I think that he can easily get that value, given how he's played. Darrell Arthur at 3,700. Love him here. He's a pretty solid cash game option because he's going to get extended minutes. And if Faried is out, he is going to be an explosive cash game option and tournament option. Brandon Bass at 3,700, no thanks. And Julius Randle at 6,000. He's sort of right on. Yeah, that's an okay value. 30 points feels like it's about right for him, especially when you're heading up against the Nuggets. At center, Nikola Jokic is drawing the ire of plenty of Basketball Monster users, especially Coach Malone. There's been some issues with the rotations at times, but it's hard to complain too much about Jokic. You can't use him in cash, though. You can only look at him in tournaments. Yusuf Nurkic has barely seen the court. Well, he hasn't seen the court in the last four or five. Not going to use him. Joffrey Lavernier at minimum salary. He's a tournament option because if something goes wrong and Malone says, oh, okay, we're not using Jokic today, and Lavernier plays 25 minutes, he's got 25 fantasy point upside. So he is a guy to look at in a tournament. The last game of the night, hopefully, is a ripper. The Thunder and the Clippers. The Clippers are favored by one. We've got a massive total of 221. Austin Rivers is on his way back. Not that it really makes too much of an impact for us DFS-wise or even regular fantasy-wise, but he could be back. That could impact the back-end rotations. It could also allow Chris Paul maybe to get a couple of minutes off. Maybe not in this one when you're taking on the Thunder, but it's possible. And Luke Marmute has been upgraded from out to questionable with an eye issue. Now, Chris Paul has been awesome. He's at 10,200. He's averaging 50 across his last five. He's another one of these 10,000 point guards that is an awesome play against Russell Westbrook, who allows massive points. Great option. Westbrook, on the other hand, at 11,000 against Chris Paul, who really restricts point guards. Westbrook's averaging still 53 across his last five. I would rather spend the 800 less, though, and use Chris Paul here. For as good as Westbrook is, the matchups favor Paul, and the salary favors Paul. At shooting guard, JJ Redick and, Jamal Crawford. That's the guy. Redick's at 4,900. He is a solid 25-point guy at that salary. I like him here. Jamal Crawford at 51 is a bit more up and down, more of a tournament option to me, but he's been pretty solid recently. Dion Wade has had a big game. I don't trust that happening again, nor do I put much faith in Randy Foy, despite the fact that he is somehow getting minutes over Cameron Payne, another travesty. Small forwards, Kevin Durant, 10,600. 50 points is almost a guarantee for him. Lock him in. Jeff Green at 5,300. If Marmute is out, I like that more, but I'm definitely not falling over myself to use Jeff Green, nor Wes Johnson, nor Paul Pierce. And shockingly enough, not Luke Marmute. Power forwards, Serge Ibaka at 5,900. He is a tournament-only option, and even then, this is not a good matchup. You can do better than Serge Ibaka. And at center, we have DeAndre Jordan at 7,900. Has not been producing recently, only averaging 25 across his last three. Steve Adams is a good defender. Not using him here. Not using Adams. And I don't believe Enes Kanter is going to shoot 11 of 11. So at 4,800, he is not someone I'm all that interested in either. Let's bring up the DFS picks of the day now. At point guard, Shelvin Mack, 3,600. D'Angelo Russell, 5,300. And Johnny Wall at 10,000. As I mentioned, you could go with Westbrook there. You could go with Chris Paul there. A couple of those high-priced point guards are in nice spots. Shooting guard, Gaz Harris, 4,800. Zach LaVine, 52. And Jim Harden, 10,700. At small forwards, PJ Hairston for a tournament at 3,600. Matty Barnes at 52. And Kev Durant at 10,600. Power Forwards, Darrell Arthur, 3,700. Markieff Morris, 54. And Tony Davis, 10,200. And the centres, Myers Leonard, 36. Mason Plumlee, 52. And Dwighty Howard, 8,100. We are done today, guys. This ulcer is still a pain in my ass, really annoying me as I speak, so I hope I didn't trip over too many words. Follow me on Twitter at redrock_bball. Instagram is redrock_bball. Facebook is facebook.com/redrockbasketball. And of course, there is Basketball Monster for all your up-to-the-minute news at Basketball Monster on Twitter. And the website is basketballmonster.com. And I do highly encourage you to go and check us out with our DFS stuff and our seasonal things heading into the season and into the playoff part of the season. Of course, Hardwood Paroxysm with stacks of great podcasts and articles happening over there all the time. Use SeatGeek, download the app, use that promo code REDROCK, support the podcast, and with an extra spare 5 minutes, leave a review. It goes a long way to keeping this podcast kicking on strong and hopefully going on forever. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.